Is bigger really better? It's a question that can apply to a lot of things, but my next guest asks it about housing. Alexandra Staub is an architecture professor at Penn State University and has written about housing affordability and how housing shapes us culturally. She joins me via Skype. And Alexandra, when people talk about this kind of thing, they often use the phrase McMansions. And I'm curious whether you have a definition of what, at least to you, actually constitutes a McMansion.
Yeah, it's an interesting question because there have always been wealthy people who have had very large houses, and our homes and our housing is often how we've represented ourselves, at least in Western culture. Our houses are a form of identity. Houses have never been just for shelter in Western society. So what we find especially as of, I would say, the 1980s or so, is a preponderance of these large-scale houses so that ever-increasing parts of the first upper middle class, now even middle class, are encouraged to strive for these very large houses. And, of course, you oftentimes can't afford a huge house in terms of the quality that you may need to pay for if you really want something that will last. But there's many different materials that look good at first glance, but they don't wear as well. So McMansions tend to be these very large houses that look really flashy, but if you look under the surface, if you look a little bit more closely, you see that they're actually made a bit cheaper.
Are builders still building McMansions to the same degree that they were in years past?
Statistically seen, from the 1960s to today, housing has gotten ever bigger. So it's not a black or white issue. I think that what we can say is that people are striving for ever more space. So you have the average number of rooms in a house has increased in the 60s or so. It was about 6 rooms per house. That was the median, and now it's 7. And also the size of the rooms has just gotten a lot larger. So the median size of newly constructed houses has almost doubled from the 1960s to today. So that, I would say, yes, we certainly are building bigger houses on average.
Well, am I right that we should clarify, too, that just because people are buying bigger and bigger homes, you know, the median-wise, that some of them are probably well-constructed and, you know, legitimate mansions as opposed to, you know, sort of the less well-made and, you know, what people call McMansions, right?
Right, exactly.
How is the trend of on median bigger homes being reconciled with millennials maybe not buying houses and people's trying to sort of move back into city centers where there is less space and, you know, real estate in general is more expensive?
Yeah, I think that that's a problem. I think that what we've done in the last couple of decades is we've built on the assumption that we're just going to keep building and keep building bigger. And I think that, you know, you make a very good point. As people move back into city centers, and some people are choosing to live in city centers from the get-go, they would prefer that their children grow up where there's more cultural opportunities, for example. And I see that, for example, New York is fairly close to where I live in Pennsylvania. So people are living in the cities, even with kids in some cases. But the question is, are we building adequate housing for these people? And I would say in many cases, no.
So what is the answer then? I mean, if developers and builders are building slightly larger, smaller homes, for lack of a better way of saying it, that are still fairly expensive, what's the answer then for folks who maybe are either looking for something smaller or who can't afford something larger?
Right. I think, and again, because we're so market-driven in the U.S., one of the things that would need to happen is someone would have to come up with creative ways and also having the courage to go out on a limb in terms of creating this, because, of course, it's a big investment. But home builders would really have to look at what can people, even at the lower end of the spectrum, afford and what would it take to accommodate them. And there's some really creative things happening, although on a very small scale. For example, you may have heard in San Francisco, which, of course, has a horrendous housing market, there are projects there which are essentially dorm rooms, like dorm buildings for professionals. And they, the people have their own room, but there's a shared kitchen and shared bathrooms. And these places have waiting lists that are enormously long because it's something that is affordable for people in a housing market that's extremely, extremely tight. So I think we just have to get more creative in offering not just the standard sort of 3 or 4 or 5 bedroom house with a yard or the condo with a very large area, but I think we need to look at creative forms of housing that could also provide new forms of community for people, because I think that's also something that people are interested in.
Alexandra Staub is an architecture professor at Penn State University.